Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Tuesday, May 31st. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Sparks, Seliger, differ on special session. Seliger sides with Democrats to do something the FBI or DPS believe lessens the chance of another Uvalde. By Stuart Doreen. Last week, State Senator Kel Seliger tweeted Governor Greg Abbott should call the Texas legislature into special sessions following the massacre at an elementary school in Uvalde. His replacement as the senator of the district that includes Midland disagrees. Midland's Kevin Sparks, who in March decisively won the Republican primary, disagrees. While many would push for an immediate legislative response, oftentimes this creates unintended consequences, Sparks offered to the Reporter-Telegram. We will never have the ability to completely eliminate evil, but must work towards strengthening families and communities. The calls for a special session followed an 18-year-old gunman's killing of 19 students and two teachers last week at Robb Elementary School. Seliger was one of two Republicans on Friday who made the call for a special session. Representative Jeff Leach of Plano was the other. On Saturday morning, all 13 Senate Democrats demanded lawmakers pass legislation that raises the minimum age to purchase a firearm from 18 to 21 years old, according to Texas Tribune reporting of a letter the Senate Democrats released. The Democrats are also calling for universal background checks for all firearm sales, red flag laws that allow a judge to temporarily remove firearms from people who are considered an imminent threat to themselves or others, a cooling-off period for the purchase of a firearm, and regulations on high-capacity magazines for citizens, the Tribune also reported. Governor Greg Abbott should call us into special sessions until we do something the FBI or DPS believe will lessen the chance of the next Uvalde tragedy. We should hope and pray every day, but do something, Seliger, an Amarillo Republican, tweeted last week. Leach tweeted, Texas lawmakers have work to do, conversations to engage in, deliberations and debates to have, important decisions to make. And the best way to do our jobs openly, publicly, and transparently is in a special session. Texans expect and deserve this, and the time demands it. Abbott said at a news conference last week that none of the laws he signed into law in the last legislative session made it easier for the gunman to arm himself for the attack on Robb Elementary School, according to reporting from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. None of those laws, including constitutional carry, are up for reevaluation, he said. This article is entitled, Sheriff's Office Captures Alligator at RV Park. By the Midland Reporter-Telegram. The Midland County Sheriff's Office reported Sunday that an American alligator was found at the Airline Mobile Home and RV Park. The alligator was captured and will be in the care of A to Z veterinary until it is released to a game warden, according to the county. We're hoping a possible owner calls to claim our friend that's obviously lost in the desert, the release said. This column is called Commentary. It is entitled, Society Needs Hope, Humanity Needs Love. By Pastor Daniel Stevens, Mid-Cities Church. How are we supposed to process the senseless taking of 19 innocent young lives in Uvalde? Another wave of devastating news crashed on the anxious psyche of the American public. Last week, it was a racially motivated massacre of 10 innocent lives in Buffalo, New York. And now this. One can barely comprehend the most recent evil act before another overtakes it in the headlines. Opinion makers and others who identify as journalists provide brief factual talking points followed by an empathetic sentiment, followed by a political discourse that places the blame at the feet of their perceived enemies. It's the gun lobby. It's the immigrants. It's a mental health problem. It's violent video games. As the instigators of rage culture on Fox and CNN clothe themselves in the righteous indignation of their own thoughts that echo from their media chambers, what is really happening? And why do these horrific outbursts of violence occur? To be generous, people who engage in the blame game are trying to provide an answer or at least make sense of why evil things happen in this world and what we can do to mitigate the effects of that evil. While these debates are not insignificant and may provide solutions to restrain the evil that exists in our culture, they fail to get to the root of the problem. Policy proposals and quick-fix remedies ensconced in the current discourse may provide a sense of righteousness to those who believe they maintain the high ground, but do nothing to bring people together to face the truth. What is the truth? Truth is not found in the halls of Congress, the classrooms of our universities, and certainly not out of the mouths of cable news personalities profiting off larger and angrier audiences, but in the account of our beginnings. When Adam and Eve first disobeyed their Creator in the garden, the blame game began. Shirking responsibility, Adam blamed Eve and God. "It was the woman you gave me," Adam valiantly declared. "I was tricked by the deceiver," Eve professed, pointing the finger at the serpent. The first sin was followed by an escalation of violence as one son took the life of the other. The book of Genesis records the further dissolution of human culture as violence, immorality, and injustice transformed an idyllic garden into a hell on earth. But why? How? Man and woman decided that they would be the arbiter of what is good and evil. They would trust their own word, their own perspective, and reject the words of God. "Did God really say?" the deceiver whispered as doubts and self-righteous ideas filled the minds of the created. Doing what seems good, what seems right in one's own eye, inevitably infringes on what seems right to their neighbor. This is the truth. The problem lies not in the external, but in the internal. It is the human heart, a heart determined to do what one feels is good or right, a heart set on living out its own truth. Hearts that cheat on their spouses, hearts that don't tell their business partners about a lucrative side deal, hearts that harbor prejudice, hearts that justify murder, hearts that deny the humanity of their perceived enemies, hearts that see the fall of others and not their own, hearts that point the finger. Scripture reminds us that the human heart is deceitful and sick. It has been since the beginning. It is not to be trusted. It should not be the arbiter of what is good and evil in the world. That is God's job, and humans are historically bad at assuming that role. If this is the truth, how does that help us move forward? Understanding that God is the determiner of what is good and evil causes us to look outside of our own words to God's words. Understanding that every human heart has the capacity for evil places the blame not on a policy or lack thereof, but on the man or woman in the mirror. Jesus' entrance into the world provided the only solution to the human heart problem. He came offering a new heart to all who would believe in him, to all who would believe his words and repent of our attempts to usurp God's role as the ultimate judge of good and evil. That new heart would provide a newfound capacity for God's creation to love one another as he intended in the garden. This love would change everything. Because of this, Jesus doesn't need an army of people clothed in their own perceived righteous judgment, defending his honor, but a gathering of servants willing to lay down their lives for their neighbor. A people who distrust their own heart, but fully trust the words of Jesus. A community that recognizes the blame game for what it is. An oversimplified solution that may offer merit on the edges, but does not get to the root. The root is the evil in me. The anger spewed out onto those I disagree with. The gossip and idle talk of half-truths. The hate for people I've never met. The fear of losing something that motivates me to do anything to keep it. The idol worship of a political ideology. The self-righteousness of standing on the moral high ground. The distortion of seeing my own sin as an honest failure, but the sin of others as intentional malevolence. I must repent and ask Jesus to give me a new heart, one that enables me to love my enemies, to forgive those who persecute me, to speak the truth in love, a heart that trusts God's standard for good and evil and doesn't impose its own, a heart willing to give its own life for righteousness but not take the life of another. I must face this truth for myself. But it is not my truth. It is truth, period. It is true for me, you, and our kids, and society. We are the problem, and Jesus is the solution. In light of this, how do we process the heartbreak of Uvalde and the tragedy of Buffalo? We approach it with humility, understanding that evil is not just out there, but in each of us. It is in me. While there will be legitimate actions for community and governmental leaders to take in response to these heinous acts, the ultimate solution is not a new policy or a new cause to rally behind, but a new heart. This can only come from Jesus. Our society needs hope. Humanity needs love. Love that is compassionate for the families who lost their precious loved ones. Love that seeks justice. Love that exists in brokenness and tragedy. Love that speaks the truth. Love that lays down his life for a friend. This is the obituary column. Tuesday, May 31st. Leo Carlton Carr, 1933 to 2022. Leo Carlton Carr passed away on April 26th. Born on May 22nd, 1933 in Port Neches, Texas, he was the son of the late Joe C. Carr and Agnes May Carr. He was preceded in death by his beloved wife, Judith May Carr, on September 1, 2021. Leo is survived by his three sons, nine grandchildren, seven great-grandchildren, and two nieces in Alaska. Interment of ashes with military honors will be in the family plot in Oak Bluff Memorial Park Cemetery, Port Neches, Texas, at a later date. The family requests any remembrances be made to the Petroleum Museum, American Cancer Society, Gifts of Hope, or a charity of choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelsh.com. Rebecca Finley Young. Mrs. Rebecca L. Finley Young of Midland, aged 35, began her next journey on Friday, May 20th. Rebecca was born on April 3, 1987, in Midland. Rebecca is survived by her husband, Daniel Young, and sons, Grant and Oliver. Her mother, Cindy Finley, sister, Melissa Finley, and brother, Marty Finley. Family and friends are invited to attend the Celebration of Life gathering at 10:30 on Thursday, June 2nd, at Ellis Resthaven Funeral Home and Memorial Park, 4616 North Big Spring Street in Midland. Donations can be made in Rebecca's honor to Safe Place of Midland. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.ellisfunerals.com. Death Notices. Kendrick McLaughlin. Kendrick Daniel McLaughlin, 34, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, May 24th. Viewing will be Thursday, June 2nd, from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m., with a receiving of friends from 5 to 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Memorial service will be Friday, June 3rd at 10 a.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, May 31st. Parents, students encouraged to report bullying. School has ended for the year, but the topic of bullying remains an issue across the country. Students or parents of students who think their child is being bullied have various options in ECISD. They can report it to a teacher, counselor, or any administrator at the school, and there are report forms available in the main office of the campuses or online. We do encourage parents and students that immediately, if they feel like their child is being bullied or another child is being bullied, to report it as soon as possible to make sure that the district administrators can do a thorough investigation and it's timely, Chief of Schools Keeley Simpson said. When a form is filed, whether it is with a counselor, teacher, or school administrator, the school administrators immediately start an investigation, Simpson said. They immediately determine, is there a threat that needs to be addressed right then in terms of do students need to be separated in the learning environment? Then they start the process of interviewing the victim, interviewing the alleged bullies, any witnesses that come out in the investigation, and then they make the determination of whether bullying occurred, she said. If bullying did occur, the parents of the victim, as well as the alleged bullies, would need to know whether it was or was not bullying. If it did occur, then the appropriate disciplinary consequences would be applied, Simpson said. If it is not bullying, but there is a student code of conduct violation, then maybe a different disciplinary consequence would be applied. Sometimes it's some type of intervention or restorative practice that may happen for the victim and the bully. Just separately, Simpson said. Chapter 37 of the Texas Education Code defines bullying as a single significant act or a pattern of acts by one or more students directed at another student that exploits an imbalance of power and involves engaging in written or verbal expression, expression through electronic means, or physical conduct that satisfies the applicability requirements, and that A has the effect or will have the effect of physically harming a student, damaging a student's property, or placing a student in reasonable fear of harm to the student's person or damage to the student's property, she said. It could also be sufficiently severe, persistent, or pervasive enough that the action or threat creates an intimidating, threatening, or abusive educational environment for a student, she said. It also may materially and substantially disrupt the educational process or the orderly operation of a classroom or school or infringe on the rights of the victim at school. This also includes cyberbullying. The investigation should be conducted within 10 days to make sure that if there is a significant act that needs to be addressed with disciplinary measures or some type of intervention, like a stay-away agreement or a schedule change, that it is handled within 10 days, Simpson said. There is no timeline in terms of reporting. We just encourage students and parents to report immediately, but there is no timeline in terms of reporting. But once the administrator or counselor or teacher learns about it, the investigation should begin immediately and results should be communicated within 10 days, Simpson added. They could wait years to report it, but it makes the investigation very difficult because of what the children remember or what they remember about incidents if they are named as witnesses. Sometimes there is a pattern of bullying where an incident takes place in 6th grade, 7th grade, and 8th grade. There are no time constraints on a pattern of bullying either. Really, the most helpful thing for the school leaders is to make sure that they find out as soon as possible to when it's happening so that they do have access to the witnesses and access to the victim and the aggressors to make sure that they can get relevant information that's timely, Simpson said. If someone retaliates, there would be a disciplinary consequence. The nature of that consequence depends on the retaliation and the severity of it, Simpson said. But it is prohibited to retaliate against someone who's reported bullying, whether it be the actual victim or a witness who's reported it, she added. Some parents might think the incident didn't amount to anything, or they could think no one would believe it or take it seriously, so they won't report it. Our school leaders take every reportable incident seriously, so when a parent or student comes forward and reports that either their child or another student is being bullied, the administrative staff takes that very seriously, and they do investigate, Simpson said. If a fight is mutual, it would not be considered bullying. But if it is a physical attack that would be some type of assault, then yes, it could be tied to bullying, she said. Social media does tend to draw out disputes because it is recorded and posted on different sites. Depending on the purpose of that, depending on what it is being used for, the students that are reporting and posting could also receive disciplinary consequences because it is disrupting the school environment and disrupting the classroom environment. Depending on what is being shared and if it is infecting the educational environment, there could be disciplinary consequences with that as well, Simpson said. She added that it doesn't matter if it's after school, if it impacts the school environment. The education code also covers cyberbullying. If it is infringing on the rights of the victim at school and disrupts the educational process or the orderly operation of the classroom or school, then it can be considered bullying at school, Simpson said. If a bullying allegation is confirmed, there could be an agreement where students are no longer allowed to be in the same classroom or sit at the same table at lunch. It's sometimes a schedule change, but to ensure the safety of the victim, Simpson said. There are consequences for violating a stay-away agreement as well. Depending on what the violation is and the severity of the act that results in the stay-away agreement, there could be more disciplinary consequences, Simpson said. Campuses also have several other methods they can use to resolve bullying, Simpson said. Those are mainly handled by the guidance and counseling department. Sometimes it's mediation, sometimes it's counseling, but yes, absolutely, our guidance and counseling department does provide the majority of those services. Again, it could be mediation, it could be some type of counseling for the bully as well as the victim of the bully, obviously to change the behavior and the victim on how to respond to the behavior, and then to help them heal and recover so that they can then contribute and feel welcome and safe back in the school environment, she said. It is easier to enforce stay-away agreements in larger facilities because there are more course options if schedules need to be changed. A lot of times, Simpson said, students may report to a counselor or teacher because they're not sure how to respond to the bullying or whether it is bullying. It could be a misunderstanding, miscommunication, or a personality conflict. That's where the administrators and counselors come in to really determine, is this bullying or is this a conflict that can be mediated, Simpson said. Texting, depending on the content, the intent of the text, and whether it's impacting the school environment, would fall under the electronic communication part of the cyberbullying code. Simpson said the Ector County ISD Board of Trustees has asked for statistics on the prevalence of bullying, the case of incidents, actual confirmed cases, and how they respond. We are currently working on that because our board has asked for that, and we have told them that we will get that to them soon after school is out, so we'll know a little bit more about the numbers and if they've gone up, Simpson said. She added that it's hard to say what the numbers will look like from this year to last year and the year before COVID hit. The police step in if they believe it's criminal. One of the ways that parents and students can report is there's a tip line. It's on the ECISD website as well as a forum that actually takes them to the Odessa Crime Stoppers link where they can report bullying at school. That usually occurs when it is believed to be criminal. If it is believed to be criminal, then the police immediately investigate. If our ECISD police get that report and they believe it is not criminal, then they immediately send it to the school administrators for them to investigate that as well, she said. Historically, Simpson said, bullying happens more at the middle school level. It does happen at the kindergarten through 12 level. Craddock says energy industry troubled. Financing, production costs, supply issues cited. State Representative Tom Craddock has worked with the oil and gas business for decades and has never seen times like these, but said he believes that problems with financing, supplies, and coping with the whims of the federal government will eventually pass and the industry will round back into shape. The 82nd District Republican from Midland said recently that a Midland man who had arranged financing for independent producers for 6 years had just returned from Wall Street and Boston, Massachusetts, with the bad news that none of the big finance firms wanted to do anything. A lot of companies won't want oil and gas on their balance sheets or investment portfolios because of the negatives out there, said Craddock, a member of the House Energy Resources Committee. They're looking more for the green aspect of it. As if the industry had reached a point where it is in effect working against itself, he said, yes, there is a big push to see if we can get more done because of the national need, and a lot of people in the country think we can solve it just by producing faster, but we don't have the refining capacity. I think we will work out of this. There are always ups and downs in oil and gas, and the pendulum will swing back the other way. Craddock cites bills passed in the spring 2021 legislative session in Austin that should help. But he said salons are waiting to see if those laws have the needed effects before determining if follow-up legislation should be pursued. They were Senate Bill 13 to prohibit state contracts with and investments in companies that boycott energy companies, House Bill 1284 to have the Texas Railroad Commission and Public Utilities Commission share jurisdiction over the injection and storage of carbon dioxide, rescinding the jurisdiction of the Commission on Environmental Quality, and HB 2483 to authorize electrical transmission and distribution utilities to lease or own and operate facilities to provide temporary emergency power in the case of extreme cold and heat. West Texas Intermediate crude oil was selling at $110.30 a barrel and natural gas for $8.26 per 1,000 cubic feet on Tuesday. Looking toward the 88th legislature in January 2023, Craddock said the situation is so unsettling that he, Odessa Representative Brooks Landgraf, Senator-elect Kevin Sparks of Midland, the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, and other key players are as yet undecided about what legislation should be filed next year. The cost of mud, sand for fracking, pipe and rig use are really high right now, he said. They produced a lot of pipe and small parts for rigs at the big steel plant in Mariupol, Ukraine, which has been bombed out. I'm sure ExxonMobil is not having any problem with cash flow, but large independents like Pioneer Natural Resources and the smaller companies were used to getting money through limited partnerships on Wall Street. There is too much uncertainty right now. OPD investigating gun at pool. On May 29th, at around 6:27 p.m., the Odessa Police Department got called to Sherwood Park Aquatic Center in regard to a report of a juvenile with a gun. A parent alerted the pool manager a juvenile had a gun. The manager tried to approach the juvenile, but the juvenile ran. The pool was put on lockdown, the news release stated. The investigation continues. Quick hits, COVID-19 tests. The City of Odessa Incident Command is partnering with Curative to offer the COVID-19 PCR tests drive-through from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at the corner of 2nd Street and Grant Avenue. Insurance information will be requested. If no insurance, test will be free. To book an appointment, visit curative.com. Summer Day Camp. Campfire West Texas will be providing a summer day camp for children age 5 through 12 years old at Gonzales Elementary School, 2700 Disney Street. The camp will open from 7:45 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., Tuesday through July 29th. Cost will be $90 for the week per child, and children will need to bring their lunch. A morning and afternoon snack will be provided for each child, along with games, trips, sports, and many more fun supervised activities. No child will be turned away because of financial need. Financial assistance is available based on family size and income levels. For more information, call Campfire West Texas at 432-570-4144 or visit campfirewtx.org. Safety and Mental Health Summit. Region 18 Education Service Center, 2811 La Force Boulevard, Midland, has scheduled a free School Safety and Mental Health Summit from 8:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Tuesday. The event offers critical insight and resources for reducing and preventing youth violence. Keynote speaker will be Molly Hudgens, school counselor, author, and Congressional Medal of Honor, Citizen Honor recipient for heroism. She will share her story of talking a student with a loaded handgun out of committing a mass shooting and how to recognize the red flags. All attendees will receive a free copy of her book, Saving Sycamore, The School Shooting That Never Happened. To register or for more information, visit tinyurl.com/YCKHJDEJ. Wildfire Relief Fund. Farmers and ranchers affected by this year's wildfires can apply for unreimbursed agricultural losses through our West Texas Wildfire Relief Fund. Applications are due Tuesday. For an application and details, visit txfb.us/wildfire-relief-fund. Does air bubble in IV cause harm? Dear Dr. Roach, a few years ago, when being prepped for colonoscopy and gastroscopy, I had an IV line inserted into my right arm with a sedative in it. As I waited to pass out, I noticed a large air bubble slowly moving down the IV line toward my arm. I got concerned about an air embolism and called the nurse over, who poo-pooed my concern. "It's just an air bubble. It won't hurt you." I insisted on seeing the charge nurse, who came over, turned off the drip, and flicked the line with her finger multiple times, getting the air bubble to move up the line. She then pinched the line shut and turned the drip back on and flicked the line a few more times until the air bubble floated into the IV bag and wobbled to the top. She released her pinch on the IV line and said, "There, are you happy now?" and walked away. Was I right to be concerned? I'm glad the sedative had not set in yet when the problem occurred, but I'd like to know the answer in case this happens again. FM. Answer. Before medical school, I had also heard that injection of air into a vein can be deadly, So I understand why you were concerned. However, I learned that the amount of air that is needed to cause harm is very large. An air bubble might be 0.2 cc and still look pretty significant in the IV tubing. The minimum amount that is likely to cause symptoms is 100 times that, so 20 cc, but it's likely to take much more than that to be fatal, usually in excess of 150 cc's. I bet nurses hear those concerns a lot, but it doesn't excuse her behavior, which sounded pretty rude the way you describe it.
This is the Dear Abby column. Teenager feels left out as mom travels with dad. Dear Abby, I'm a senior in high school, and I come from a family that is financially stable, but unable to travel often due to time and money constraints. We usually travel only once a year in the summer, and for the most part, we're not able to travel very far or stay for long. For the past 3 years, our vacation plans have been on hold due to the pandemic and other concerns. My parents have been on 2 trips across the country in the past 12 months. I accept that they're a married couple and occasionally want to travel without the rest of their family. However, recently, it came to my attention that Mom bought 2 tickets to Europe for her and Dad as a birthday gift. She used the money she had been saving for a family vacation to pay for them. I feel betrayed. I was under the impression that we couldn't afford a vacation at this time, or that we were still waiting for the chaos of the pandemic to settle before traveling. But my mother was happy to spend the money on a vacation for her and Dad. My dad is turning 50, and I understand it's a very special occasion. However, I can't help but wonder why I haven't received so much as a dinner after being accepted into my top college and earning 2 scholarships. Am I overreacting? If not, how should I address this? Signed, Wanting a Getaway in New York. Dear Wanting, I agree that having been accepted to your top college and having earned 2 scholarships, your achievement was something to be celebrated. In reality, the achievement was a reward in itself. That it was not recognized tells me there must be a lot going on for your folks right now. While family vacations are wonderful and memorable, so are milestone birthdays such as the one that's approaching for your dad. Your mother should be forgiven for ensuring it will be extra special. If you feel an itch to travel, if you don't already have one, consider getting a part-time job so you can afford a getaway with friends or a student or church group. Because you are no longer a child, you should talk to your mother about how you feel. Dear Abby, my adult son got so furious with me that he called me, yelling vicious things, and threatened to cut me out of his life. I've never been spoken to that way before. It was so traumatic that I was shaking after I hung up on him. What made him so angry was that I didn't thank his mother-in-law for an email she sent wishing me happy birthday. I had received 30 email birthday wishes that day and didn't acknowledge any of them. I would have thanked someone who'd gone to the trouble of calling or sending an actual card. I don't think I behaved improperly, but maybe there's some rule that slipped by me. Your thoughts? Signed, Unhappy Birthday in Texas. Dear Unhappy, the polite way to deal with email special occasion wishes is to either acknowledge them individually or do an email blast thanking everyone for remembering you. To have remained stone silent was ungracious. However, for your son to have gone off the deep end, yelled vicious things, and threatened to cut you out of his life was uncalled for. And whether or not you receive one, you deserve an apology. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.